When it comes to cyber threats, we all want to put a sock in it. I'm talking about powering your security operations center. Hello, I'm Helen Gidney, Softcat's Head of Architecture, and welcome back to Softcat's Explain It podcast. We're here to talk tech in simple, jargon-free language. We know that security is a key part of any business. You need to protect your best kept secrets and to keep third parties out of your information. But with a massive lack of cybersecurity skills in the market and the cost of cybercrime skyrocketing every year, how do we use technology to bridge the gap and keep our companies safe? In today's episode, we'll pull back the curtain with the help of our experts. We have Josh Bates, Softcat's technologist for Microsoft Security, Paul Solomon, Softcat's Head of Cybersecurity Services, and Emma Boughton, Security, Compliance and Identity Specialist at Microsoft. So team, what is a Security Operations Center and why would a customer need one? Josh, do you want to take that first?
Sure. So a SOC or a Security Operations Center is basically just a centralized function in an organization. They can either be in-house or outsourced teams. They're full of IT security professionals, or we can call them analysts, that basically are there to monitor an organization's infrastructure with the overall aim to prevent cybersecurity breaches and improve the posture. So the primary goal is to obviously stop attacks, but when they're too late, they're obviously there to respond as quickly as possible to them. They're also responsible for taking proactive measures to protect against potential threats. They use intelligent sources for this and then try and get ahead of the attackers by creating use cases and procedures before it's too late. And finally, a SOC can also help drive a technology strategy of an organization. They should and can have impact on decisions about what security tools they need, procedures and policies that may need to be in place.
So you mentioned the Security Operations Center can drive a technology strategy. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, great question. What I mean by that is obviously a SOC uses security solutions such as a SIEM or SOAR or even XDR solutions. So whatever they use day to day, they need to feed into the SOC. So what I mean they can drive the strategy is they can really influence what technologies they want to be using within the SOC and ultimately what the organization should be driving towards.
And that is to make sure that the SOC has the right products, technologies to be able to stop those threats, the best products that they need to help stop the threats, right?
Yeah, exactly. You need to have people in the SOC who understand the technology they need to use. Otherwise, there's no point having a SOC because they don't understand what solution they're trying to use.
Yeah, I would just add to that as well, Josh, because whilst it's, you know, a very technical function, a SOC, it is also primarily a human-centric function. So any technology investment is going to need to help augment and complement the skills of those people that are working in the SOC. And I think that is key critical.
I think on top of that, the important part of the SOC is to actually look at the tooling that sits outside of the SOC as well. So really understanding the end user compute tools we're using across our server infrastructure and things like that. And by using continuous monitoring, we get a really good view of how well those tools are working, the efficacy of them. So when we bring things like red teaming, going after our own environments, testing what we're monitoring and things like that, we get a really good view of how those tools are working. And that allows us to better defend organizations by either recommending different solutions, tuning the solutions we have, or really changing policy. A large part of everything the SOC does is also inform policy across our customers and across their estates. And that is as much about, again, end users working in the right way, using our corporate assets right. It is what protects an organization the best.
Okay, so we've gone big there. You're saying that having the right people and the right tooling working in the SOC is not the be-all and end-all. You need the people in the wider organization, you need the tools in the wider organization to work well to essentially stop those threats getting into the business. Is that right?
Yeah, a SOC is a key component to protecting an organization. But if you don't have the policies, processes, tools in place, then a SOC's never going to be educated in the right way. Ultimately, a SOC at its very core is analyzing information that comes in from other platforms. And we're using detection rules, we're using technologies to really take those down into what's going on. But if the originating applications and things like that aren't sending those events to us, then we know nothing about it.
Okay. And Paul, you mentioned there about getting that right information in if the SOC is going to be able to analyze it. Are you then saying that is where our threats are coming from today? It's not necessarily a central thing. It's from the end users and those on the edge.
So I think if we look across our experience of customers that we help in real-time incidents at the moment, there's probably two main areas that they come from, and there's one area that we end up dealing with. And that one area that we end up dealing with the most is ransomware. Day in, day out, we see instances of ransomware, and that is where the threat actors are making the most money or causing the most pain. We see a lot of nation-state attacks that we deal with, and they aren't necessarily there to get financial gain. They are there to cause pain, whether that's across our critical national infrastructure, across an organization that has some sort of dealings in other states, or whether that is ultimately to get money out of the situation. And then the two ways that those come about, the top two actually, is probably two things. So social engineering, the likes of phishing, whaling, those kind of things. And the second one, unfortunately, is still misconfiguration. And that comes in at two levels. Misconfiguration is either doing really bad cyber hygiene. So things like presenting RDP to the internet still. Probably 50% of the incidents we deal with, the customer has RDP published to the internet at some level. And that is a big factor of an easy way for targets to get into an infrastructure. Or there are vendors that have critical vulnerabilities that they take a long time to patch. Making sure that you are patching vulnerabilities quickly leads to us being able to protect those environments better. And then on the social engineering one, we see it all the time. So people trying to get your credentials, people sending you an email with a link to click on so that you can go and give them details they want to try and access your infrastructure. If we saw one of the big casino threats from last year, they actually phoned an IT help desk up and started to engineer the person on the end to hand over a new password, reset a password, and things like that. So that social engineering, phishing, whaling, whatever we want to call it, is still massive and out there and getting more and more advanced. So things like proxying, two-factor authentication, that's out there. And we think that we're securing ourselves by using 2FA, but actually they've got ways to sit in the middle of that now and to really gain the information we need. And that links back into us needing our end users to be our first line of defense, really. They need to be alert and looking for what's going on, and also our technologies to sit alongside that and help protect and reduce the amount of that as much as possible.
Interesting you say that, Paul, because I'd agree that email is still the number one attack vector, so that phishing email compromise. But to your point, you know, in recent months, we've seen that this has advanced to not only include things like Exchange, but, you know, absolutely target comms platforms like Microsoft Teams. And actually, they're going beyond text now, so they're using QR codes. And what that does is it means that attackers are going beyond the boundaries of where organizations typically protect. And what an attacker's now doing is hoping that an end user is going to scan the QR code using their personal device that may not have any protection on it. So that may then prompt a user to enter their corporate credentials, making it a really effective fish. So yeah, completely agree with you. It highlights the importance of having multi-factor authentication and risk-based conditional access in place, but also that education part on the end user. Absolutely right. Yeah.
And for me, that risk-based part, there's two things that I think we should get really comfortable with. Risk-based, actually understanding what is right across our user base. So where people should be logging in from, what assets they should be logging in from, and actually starting to get really tied down on what good looks like. So instead of all the time looking for what wrong looks like, actually what's good, and set our platforms up from that level. And the second point of that is, I think we should get more comfortable with controlling applications and things like that we have on our devices. So going back to the old school, actually locking down what looks good on a device, controlling the applications, controlling ports and things like that, making sure that business level devices really are only being used for that business level stuff. It starts to reduce our risk. It doesn't help with what Emma just said with regards to us using our personal mobiles to go and scan QR codes. But on that corporate level, it really does start to reduce our risk. And obviously the one thing that we want to stop is anyone getting to the crown jewel. So like our server estates, data, things like that. So as much as we can do possible to reduce the risk to those, the better place we are in.
So it feels like there's layers to a SOC or the security that you need a company to have. And we're talking there about the balance of control of the end users and what they do versus, I guess, some of the flexibility they need to be able to do their jobs, especially with hybrid working and everybody working further and further away from the office. So how do you do that? Does that come from people, process, tooling directly from your operations center out? How does that work?
I think from my point of view, it's not just the operations center. The operations center makes up a key pillar of that. So they're helping to recommend what you should be doing through the use of tooling. They are seeing what's going on. So they're the eyes and ears. And if you look in our environment, we're the eyes and ears for our own internal security team, our CISO and things like that. So we provide the information that we know about back to them, but it's them that ultimately make the decision on that tooling part. It's them that make the decision on how we respond to incidents and how we recover if it were ever to happen. So it is about being part of that. There's numerous levels in a SOC. There's lots of bits that make it up. So there's the kind of continuous monitoring, the incident response, compliance management and analysis and things like that. So it's bringing all of those together and then feeding other parts of the organization, in my mind, the information they need to be able to make decisions which ultimately feed into what we do. So it's kind of an ecosystem across all parts.
I think ultimately, like, a successful SOC is achieved by not only the SOC analyst knowledge of the cybersecurity environments and the threats out there, but also the understanding of the internal weaknesses of the business and the business priorities. Because as Paul just said, ultimately, it's the C-suite that make the decisions on what technologies they're going to buy. So you need to develop a security roadmap with them from the SOC internally that aligns to the long-term needs of a business.
Okay, so it becomes that group ecosystem, as Paul put it, of the SOC influencing the C-suite to get the right technologies to balance that flexibility and control. And Paul mentioned all sorts of different roles and capabilities you would need in a SOC. So how would you start to build those as a business that maybe doesn't have one or has very, very minimal security skills or presence?
To build a SOC, it's really hard. It's difficult to get it right first time. I think when we speak to organizations, I think Paul will attest to this, I think you speak to 99% of them, they said they'd make changes in the way they approached it, even if they're just minor changes. But getting it right first time is very hard. So it's not a case of getting it right and leaving it. It's a continuous process. You have to monitor throughout the entire lifespan of the SOC, really. There's five key considerations, I would say, that you need to take into account. Firstly, you've got timeframes. So when do you need this SOC implemented by? If the answer to that is now, you're probably already too late. This could obviously lead to rushing decisions. On the flip side, if you started too early, you don't want to just waste the time of analysts or resources that are waiting there for months to get going. You need to find that optimum balance of when to implement it, really. You've also got the question, it's probably the biggest one I'd say when building a SOC, is internal or external. So SOC is a huge task, it's a huge investment, and ultimately it's a huge responsibility on whoever's running it. So you need to consider whether you want to build or buy a SOC, which leads on to the next consideration, I'd say, is the cost consideration. Now, this is probably the biggest one for most organizations. It's because the SOC people won't be counting the money. That will be the C-suite who are doing that, or procurement. So you can't really discuss anything without cost considerations. That would be nice for a business to tackle the technology, the people, the internal, external, without even thinking about a cost, but it just doesn't work like that. So you've got considerations you need to answer, like, can we even find, let alone hire, or afford to hire the employees that we require to implement a successful SOC? Or would it ultimately make more economic sense to use a managed service provider who already have these resources and capabilities?
I think there's a really good point on that, Josh, that SOCs are really hard. They're not easy to get right. And a large part of that is around people. Like, we can all buy technology. I think anyone can go out and buy technologies. Quite a lot of them for a SOC are expensive and maybe cost prohibitive in themselves. But if you're going to monitor your security, my personal opinion is that should be 24/7, 365. 8/5 isn't good enough. 90% of the incidents we deal with start at 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. Like, they do it just as everyone's leaving to go home to have a nice weekend. They know the time to hit us. And we see that over weekends. And we see that even in incidents that we're dealing with and helping to triage, if they're going to come back for a second bite at the cherry and have another go, they'll do that on a Friday afternoon when these things are coming. So to run an effective SOC 24/7, you need at least 8 people. And even if you want to invest in those 8 people, it's really hard to find them. Like, one of the biggest things we have in our SOC is getting the right people in, keeping them entertained, keeping them actually enjoying their job. Like, it's really hard. And we're lucky that we look across a large customer base and it keeps them interested. But keeping people on your books and keeping them enthused and not going to just go and look at more money somewhere else or something like that, it is hard. It is probably the biggest key fact to delivering a successful SOC.
I think you also face the challenge you touched on it there, Paul, with smaller organizations, maybe not large enterprises, who go to build a SOC. Let's say they build it internally, they develop these resources. It's how do they keep them? How do they keep them from just running to a big, large enterprise for more money, doing the same job? And ultimately, that's one of the biggest challenges as well with an internal SOC is employee retention. Because as Paul mentioned as well, to be successful, you need 24/7, 365 days a year. And how are you going to manage that with employee burnout? So making sure people aren't tired. You've got to bring into account things like night shifts. So how many days on and how many days off are they?
I think a large part of that is around using the right tools and also making it fun. Things like automation for enriching events and that, like that. There was a time where an analyst had to go off and look in 6-7 different threat intelligence sources to look at an indicator of compromise and try and figure out what's going on. But that should be done by automation nowadays. Like, we should be using our analysts to add the human intelligence of what looks right in an infrastructure, what we know about our infrastructure, what we know about the wider security posture at any point in time. So I would say taking the donkey work off of those analysts in the early stages of removing that heavy lifting, which is really, really boring, is how you get people engaged, getting them into the nuts and bolts of what's going on, being investigating an incident from start to finish. It is really what people want to do. And you see it with analysts all the time that they get the bug, they start to investigate something and they don't want to give up until they found it. They also want to be the person that's found it. And we have to get away from the stigmatism that a SOC is a dark room where everyone sits there quietly and doesn't necessarily have fun. Like, a SOC should be a fun, engaging environment with cool tools to play with as well, but with that one aim of really defending our organization. So yeah, I think it's at lots of levels, but all about doing the right thing with the right tools in the right place.
I like that.
Yeah, I think the one thing we haven't touched on is even technology. So that was the last consideration, I would say, when you're thinking about creating a SOC. And again, this leads on from all the different areas we've discussed. So can we get the people to use the technology? How much is the technology going to cost? All those sorts of things. And if it's external SOC, do they use this technology? Can they log this technology? All that sort of stuff. So that key decision is split into two, really. So what products are we going to use feeding into the SOC? So things like Microsoft Defender, CrowdStrike, Tenable. There are other providers out there, but there's loads available. And also the SIEM and SOAR solution as well. What are we going to use on that end? Are we going to use Sentinel, Sentinel One, Splunk, all those sorts of things?
Other products are available.
Yeah. It may seem like that's a simple question, but it's really not, because it leads on to that people conversation. Can the people we're hiring actually use Microsoft Sentinel? Do they know how to use KQL? Can they run KQL queries to proactively defend against threats? You've got to think about all of these concurrently, really. You can't take one at a time. You've got to think about them all at the same time. And that's why getting a SOC right is so difficult. If you miss one thing, it's going to have a consequence on another section of it.
So essentially, this stuff is complicated. And you're essentially looking at, do you build it yourself?
trying to find that right expertise, trying to find that right technology, or do you use someone to do it for you, but that can be very expensive? Is there a third way? Paul was mentioning about automation. Are there technologies that we could use, Emma, to use in that SOC that might help customers balance cost and experience?
Yeah, definitely, Helen. And look, there's loads of factors to think about here when considering what technology to underpin your SOC. So, you know, primarily customers are concerned with, is any technology investment going to enhance the capabilities of those SOC analysts? You know, I said earlier, a SOC is fundamentally a human-centric operation. So any technology is going to need to enhance the skills of those people, doing things like enabling them to defend against threats faster or scale more effectively. So, you know, when I speak to customers, they say, look, we don't want complex architectures. We don't want security solutions that might have become sprawled and difficult to manage. They don't want siloed solutions because they can be costly and perhaps leave, you know, big gaps in their defense coverage. But what they do want is they want to be able to understand holistically what's going on across their whole environment. And then ideally, they want that presenting back to them in a single place, in a single pane of glass experience. And then, you know, to Josh's point, there's lots of other factors to consider. So Josh mentioned earlier the challenge of how do we resource a SOC with people with the right level of expertise? And he's absolutely right. You know, this is a huge challenge. We know that there is a global skills shortage of cybersecurity professionals. And we also know that there's an increasing number of sophisticated attacks and attackers all working at 5 p.m. on a Friday afternoon. So, you know, this is a significant challenge to overcome. So I guess we need to think about how can technology help to overcome all of these different challenges? And I think they can be achieved by looking at a number of different things when you're considering what technology to support that SOC. So thinking about things like, does this technology help to automate remediation? Thinking here about ensuring that there is built-in automation capabilities in any extended detection and response tools, like those that sit within Microsoft Defender XDR, or maybe thinking about the built-in playbooks and security orchestration and response capability in Microsoft SIEM solution Sentinel. It's these type of things that are going to significantly reduce that mean time to remediation, which essentially is one of the key performance indicators of any SOC. And then, you know, I guess thinking as well about, does this technology give me integrated end-to-end defense coverage? So, you know, I mentioned earlier, customers don't want complex and sprawling architectures. We know that attack vectors have grown. We know they've evolved, and customers are now looking for a single integrated platform that covers everything, you know, be that their endpoints, their user identities, their data, could be their SaaS applications, their on-prem and their cloud environment. They want that coverage across the whole lot. So I guess when you're looking at technology for your SOC, it's also really important to consider, can that technology provide that integrated end-to-end defense coverage? So, you know, as an example, Microsoft, we're actually going even further. So we've recently announced our unified security operations platform. And this was a direct result of customer feedback. And essentially what that means is we're starting to bring together all of our threat protection capabilities in a single experience for defenders. And it's this that's going to deliver the most optimized analyst experience. So you're going to have less clicks, less integration, and ultimately less information that's being kept in their head. You know, and you talked about the challenge of employee retention. You know, we don't want that information being kept in their heads. And then I guess, you know, other considerations. So does any technology investment help to reduce that insane noise to signal ratio? Does it help filter out irrelevant information? You know, again, that's crucial when you consider that employee burnout of SOC analysts. So with a SIEM solution like Microsoft Sentinel, you're going to have that machine learning that automatically correlates alerts into prioritized incidents. So you can start to reduce false positives by a considerable amount. And when you consider that ever-increasing threat landscape alongside the skills shortage, you know, this is going to be key critical. And then I guess finally on that skills shortage, you know, this is a significant challenge to overcome. So you need to consider what technology could help actually address this. And this is where AI technology, such as Microsoft's Copilot for Security, can play a really crucial role here. So this generative AI technology can help to simplify the complex. It can allow you to get a holistic real-time visibility into what's going on across your whole environment, and then also put that threat intelligence at your fingertips. But crucially, that's going to allow you to do all of this by simply using natural language without having to write complex queries. So it's this generative AI technology that's going to create a really brilliant upskilling effect for more junior SOC analysts, but ultimately also allow you to recruit from a much, much broader and much more diverse tech talent pool. So yeah, loads of things to consider when you're deciding on that technology to look at. But I think when you get that right, you significantly shift the scales in favour of your security analysts, which is ultimately what we want to do.
100%. And you mentioned diversity there. I think diversity is always a big one. And we could talk a whole other episode about that stuff. But thank you so much all for joining me today. Excellent guests. Thank you for some of those subjects there. For you listening now, I hope that's helped you look at some of the considerations you need for maybe setting up your own security operations center or what you need to do. The main takeaway I've taken is this stuff is complicated. Get your experts, get your technologies, get your people, process, tooling, and ultimately watch what your end users are doing. They're the ones that are clicking on the dodgy links, so keep an eye on them. So if you want to listen to more episodes from this season, we'll be releasing them on the last Tuesday of every month. Alternatively, you can stream or download all episodes from every season on your preferred platform. We'll be back next month with another topic to talk tech in simple, jargon-free language. But for now, thank you for listening to Explain It.